As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good.
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At the time, there's a war going on. It just started.
Right.
They're making everybody pick a side. Yes, me and my brother caught in the middle. Between two, at that time, were the biggest drug cartels in the world. The most powerful, the most deadliest cartels.
Mm-hmm.
It's not somebody telling you like you're in a gang. It's the boss telling you, hey, if I find out that you're receiving 1 kilo from them, you're going to have to answer.
Right.
Then, not only that, they're going to say, and all your little friends that you had that we know you had, I want them to take care of. Some of these people are my friends. Some of these people I'm like, I'm close to.
Right.
And you have that on top of me cooperating.
The pressure of that already going on.
We're still selling drugs, meaning we're still playing cops and robbers every day.
The government had a hard time understanding. If I tell them, don't sell no more drugs to me, they're going to think, oh, these dudes picked the other side.
Right.
It's a war. They don't play fair. If we send our wives away, we send our family away, and then they come and they're like, well, where's your family at?
Right.
Something's wrong. We put them in that situation. At the same time, it's like, both our wives are pregnant. While we've been cooperating.
The place where the strangest, expect the strangest things to happen is right here.
Our children are a month apart.
Wow.
Who does that? Who puts their family, their kids at risk?
Right.
We made the mistake of them knowing that we're family men, knowing that we're always with our wives. As a man, you're like, damn, what am I doing? Carrying that with you, that what you're doing. You're betraying everyone you...
Right. It's going against yourself. Everything that you already...
Everything that you've ever known, everything that you work for, everything, all the people around you your whole life. We're keeping stuff from my own family. Our wives, us four, were the only people that knew what we were doing. We don't tell anyone because, first of all, trustworthy. Second, because if we told those people we love, we were scared that they were going to try to change their mind. Because it didn't benefit anyone but us.
Listen.
I'm Curtis Fitzsimmons Jackson.
And I'm Charlie Webster.
And this is Surviving El Chapo. The twins who brought down the drug war.
Get
Getting out of the cartel and changing your life is not as simple as just walking away. Every path had the potential to take away the twins' life, one way or another. Age and family have a way of bringing your priorities into perspective. Breaking the cycle of their family history, stopping themselves from repeating what their father did to them, was going to be a monumental task.
It all goes back to family. It's that bond that keeps you going. You want to be better for the people you love and create a better life for them, no matter what it takes. Ultimately, that was what pushed the brothers to do what they had to do.
Going to meet the feds. We're in a hotel. And of course, we discussed what I was interested in, getting the best deal possible. And they were looking at me like I was crazy.
I do remember like my brother calling. I wanted no details. And I remember him saying,
"Bro, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. They're lost. They're just lost. I don't know if this is a good idea."
That didn't make us feel good.
We were in another country with no protection whatsoever. And it was just a very scary feeling, I think, for all of us, because we didn't realize that the U.S. didn't have any jurisdiction in Mexico and that they would basically be on their own. And they would basically have to do everything as if the U.S. wasn't involved. And I think that's what was more the scary part. Knowing how innovative that the Sinaloa cartel was very frightening, just because, you know, they had people that they would hire, like IT people that would drive around and they would pick up phone conversations from the airwaves to make sure that nobody was telling. Cooperation is like, that equals death. You're in grave danger and there's no guarantee, and I just was, I think, scared for our lives. It was like so surreal. I knew there was no turning back. And that to me was scary in itself. When Jay and Peter were meeting with agents, that didn't sit well with me, because I felt like somebody was gonna find out.
And we're kind of going back and forth, kind of just sharing information. I remember we met with him. I said, "Listen, Chapo and Mayo called. They want me to go see them. You guys want to come?" One of them had all tats. He looked like a biker. And at that time, there's a lot of Canadians there. So I'm like, "Man, you look like, they won't even think you're an agent. You could come with me. I'm going to say that you're my Canadian customer." And they're like, "Absolutely not. That would never happen." I guess they didn't trust me. Like, I was not ever going to try to put them in harm's way. I mean, I was getting that bold, I guess, getting frustrated. So we'll meet with them and just give them information. We had given them a couple of loads and just talked to them about the business. It was just stressful. Really, really stressful.
It was very, very stressful. I remember, like, at the time when I'm talking to agents and we're like a little deeper into our cooperation, and they're like, "I'm gonna give your number to this agent." I'll be like, "Do not give my number to no one. I don't want no one to know I'm doing this." And sadly, like, there was a cooperator who didn't make it. We come to find out that there was a Colombian man that was cooperating with the feds, and they had found out about it.
Against Chapo.
Against Arturo Beltran.
Against Beltran.
Yeah, they had a lot of people on the payroll, a lot of higher-ups on the payroll in the government. And
Beltran had a lot of higher-ups in the government on his payroll. In the U.S. government.
In the Mexican government.
Mexican government on his payroll.
Yeah, these individuals are working together on special teams with the U.S. government. They're feeding them information. They're, in turn, feeding the information to the cartel. And this is at the very top. So at that time, we're working on the deal, and cocaine gets a little bit hard to get. and Arturo Beltran. He's on the run. They have him bad on the run at the time. Arturo Beltran's like, they're kicking on every door. Everywhere he stays, they're like on him, you know? Like, they're hot on his tail. And I remember they called us and said, look, I got 5 tons coming.
Who called you?
Arturo Beltran and the people, like, I got 5 tons. You tell me how much you want to buy of these. And we're like, well, let me see how much money we could get together. So we end up purchasing like 1,040 kilos. I record those calls. And the load got through. And I purchased 1,000 kilos of that. Well, I turned that over to the feds.
And were you not supposed to purchase it from Beltran?
No, I'm playing both sides at this time. I have to. I took that risk because in order for me to not only to complete my cooperation, I had to keep myself alive. It was just a nightmare. It was a nightmare to be thinking like I'm the feds, Chabomay, Arturo Beltran. Like you're trying to just satisfy everyone and risking it all every day. I can't even tell you in words what it was like. At the same time, I have my baby coming.
He was a zombie, for sure.
Yeah, it was.
Couldn't eat, really. Wasn't present. Trying to juggle so many things.
And at the same time, like my brother brought the idea. He brought the idea to the table, then he would disappear on me. I'd be so pissed off at him, man. Like, bro, like, you gotta help me.
What do you mean he disappeared?
Like, I hate to say it like that, but that's why I felt like I was angry that he didn't like the idea of, like, recording the people. Once that hit home, it was like, it wasn't the part he wanted to entertain. It's just so ugly of a time, man. I worked so hard, man, just to do everything I could to help the government in order, you know, in turn to help ourselves in our future. I used to feel sometimes the government didn't do a good enough job to put the case together, you know? Like, we're out there on our own. No help, like, no guarantee. It was like November the 12th. I remember it being a nice, chilly November day in Mexico. We had all the people with us. And I remember I had been expecting the call from Chapo for like a day or two. And I had his phone in my pocket. And I remember it was a white phone. And I had the recorder in my other pocket. At that time, I was carrying the recorder around. We're going to eat, and we're in a convoy of trucks. Me, Yvette, like, all of us are going out to eat. And the Mexican government sent me a police present. And on a normal day, you know, you send a lookout, tell you how it looks. On this day, it was just like Sunday or something. We're going to go, you know, we're going to have a family meal. And we're passing up, like, we're getting to like a popular place in Guadalajara, you know, they call it La Glorieta Minerva. And I see that they have a military checkpoint, like a whole cop checkpoint with the military. And I'm with the convoy and I have the recorder in my pocket. And I'm like that's all I need for them to pull me over and I have the recorder in my pocket. They'll just stop anywhere and put a checkpoint. And they'll just stop pulling cars over. And I remember they see me and they're like, they start telling me to pull over. And I kind of like pull to the side. I'm like, I'm panicked. I'm like a little in panic mode. I kind of pull to the side, but there's like a long line of the cars that I already had pulled over. And I kind of pulled off to the side and I just took off. And they didn't come. Thank you, God. I was like, thank you, God, they didn't come.
If they'd have found the recorders, what do you think would have happened?
3/4 of them work for the cartel. Either one, they work for the cartel, the other, they're actually real good cops, and they're turning me in, like, why do you have a recorder? You know, I had people in the car, like, it was just, oh my God. And those moments were just one after another. Not too long after that, I make another recording. I turn in a load of heroin. The government's allowing me to pay for these loads with our own cash. I give the government the money, they'll process the money and then turn it in to the cartel. And they're documenting, they're gonna document all this. So my workers don't know that I'm cooperating. So I tell them, I'm on the phone with the agent saying, look, we're gonna hand over the money at this place, at this time. And then he'll be like, okay, let me see if I get my team there. Okay, we got a team there. So they'll just document that they're seeing this exchange of money. What scared me is that when I would send my courier, that he never noticed that the feds were there. And that made me feel like how vulnerable this operation could be. He doesn't realize that the feds are watching him. I know they're watching him. You know, they turn over the money to the cartel's carrier, turn in the money. 7 minutes later, my phone rings. It's Chapo Mayo's, like, compadre, like, their head of security. And he's like,
listen, there's something fucking funny, man. Are you guys rats? The guy's calling me saying that, you know, there's a car following him, that the cops are following him, they're on him.
I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm calling my worker on the radio. And I'm letting him hear. I'm like, hey, did you see a car? Did you give him the money?
He's like, yes, I gave him the money. He left.
Did you see anyone follow him? Like,
no. Yeah, I seen him go down the street. I went my way. He went his.
I'm like, is anyone following you?
No.
I know that they're following him. I'm like, I don't know why you're saying that. Like,
there's something funny here, man.
I said, let me call you back.
I'll never forget that day. Sure enough, I think on this drop-off, the DA has a helicopter and has a couple cars. They're following the car back with the money. Usually I would have recorded a call like that, and I couldn't because he caught me off guard, and I picked up the phone. And he was like,
hey, listen, motherfucker. They're fucking following my guy. Are you a fucking snitch or what the fuck?
Swallowed, I was like, who the fuck are you talking to like that? You asked me to do you the favor. Now I'm the snitch? I said, I'm going to talk to my dad about this. Like,
oh, no. Just let me just see, man. Maybe it's nothing.
Get off the phone. I was like, whoa, shit. I'm pissed. By that time, like, our relationship with the agents already had kind of like kind of, you know, you're just talking, so sometimes we'll talk about life, like, you know, or talk about the case, or, you know, with different agents. Or, hey, you remember this time, and how'd you guys do this, like, or whatever the case is. And I remember calling back, and he's like, what the fuck? I'm, like, literally probably even got emotional. I'm like, oh, my family's here, like, you're fucking putting my life in danger. Over 20 fucking kids, whatever the fuck. I was just like, fuck, who knows? Just
Jay
screaming.
Was screaming, call it off. Please, and I'm like shocked, like what's happening?
Like literally emotionally, like begging them in the like worst way.
What did they call say when you said off. Call it off,
he was
call
like,
it off?
Hold on. Like, I'll call you first, let me find out. I did feel a little betrayed by them. Like, there's no reason why you're gonna have to put my life. You don't have to do any damn stings, like, I'm right here, I'm helping you guys.
And then I remember calling Chapo's head of security back and be like, look, I don't know what to tell you, my guy's good. I'm gonna tell him to keep, take a couple spins and see what happens. You know, and then he's like, look, man, there's something funny here, all right? He's like, I'm gonna tell you something right now. That money ain't gonna be counted until it gets in my hands. So you're responsible for it. And then I remember a couple of days later, I just follow up, but I'm like, hey, so did you get the money? Everything good? He's like, yeah, everything was good, man. But like, weird, like. And them moments would drive me crazy. How could you sleep good at night?
How did you?
You couldn't.
I think I had lost Peter already when he started his cooperation.
Was there ever a time during that 7 or 8 months that you thought they'd sussed you? The cartel had sussed you? Sussed you out?
Yes. It was nerve-wracking once I was cooperating. I remember this one time, like, it was in October, September, October. They said they wanted both of us to go. He would call them, like, at the time, they'll be like,
La señora y el señor, they want to see you.
And I understood that was Chapo Mayo were asking to see us. I was like, we both can't go, you know? I explained to the lieutenant. And he was telling me,
yeah, let me call you back. Okay, one of you guys could come. But you gotta tell me what day you're gonna be here. And you better be here.
I was like, all right, let me check some flights. And I'm talking to my brother, like, bro, man, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, man. They're calling saying they want to see us. And I was like, look, let me ask them for some cocaine. If they give it to us, then we're good. If they say no, then something's wrong.
But you did not think then they could be tricking you?
Yeah, but they don't want to trick you and give you 700 kilos.
Right, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
so if they gave you coke, it was a way to know that they hadn't figured you out.
Yeah, because if not, they would have been like, no, come see me, then we'll talk. Then I would have been like, okay, we'll be there Friday and be like, we got to go. You know?
Yeah.
I remember asking him for the coke. I'm like, I asked him for like a large amount. He's like, hey, let me see what I have. And he tells me like, yeah, we have 380. What if I could give you the rest in a couple of days? I was like, okay, great. When can I pick them up? Oh, you can pick them up tomorrow if you want, or today. And I felt, okay. I felt that tense, like, we'll see what he says. And then, you know, at that time, you know, I'm talking, then he's texting me some stuff. And I'm like, all right, bro, then you could go. But it was still nervous, like, sending my brother, you know?
How did Jay go?
So Jay went. Was there, and everybody was there during that meeting. It was a lot of the main cartel, you know. My brother was snapping pictures. I can't believe, I'm like, bro, like, why would you do that? Why would you risk it? Like, it's not coming, they'll let you keep your phone. So that was like a major, like, no, like, why would you do that?
Sometimes I would record stuff on my phone, take like pictures. I remember one time I took so many good pictures that something happened where I got nervous and I started erasing the pictures. Like, I don't want to be like, why are you taking pictures? My wife is right here. I think we talked about it. And sometimes she'll be like, how the fuck did you do that? There's one time where they had a table and they have all kinds of stuff on top of the table, radios and stuff. And I said, I'll call him, senor, senor. I'm like, I'm gonna step away. I'm gonna use your phone. I gotta call, check in. You know, I check in with my wife. They laugh about that. And I grab the phone, the satellite phone, so now dial. I would buy a brand new phone so I could actually. I would buy a brand new phone that I had with me, you know, to be able to talk to Peter or to like that. So I would buy brand new phones just for those visits. I have their phone number. You know, I have no service on my phone. So I have Val's phone. I call the number on the satellite phone. It ring. I'll hang up. Oh, it's not working. I'll grab the next phone. Ring. Hang up. I try to get all the phones there. I even be like, if I see them have phone, hey, the phone's there. I don't know, it's not going through. Let me see your phone. Now I have all their phone numbers.
That was nerve-wracking because
he's
there using every phone of their satellite.
But they always did it though, so it wasn't like something
Yeah, were you not scared they'd be suspicious?
I always did it. And I was calling my wife's phone. It's not like I was calling the agent. But I was just registering all the numbers so I could give it to the government.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's booted?
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene. I've lost all on the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
People who travel my art through, but I don't care who you are. They're just regular men. Selfish people. They're not, you know, they're not gods. They're regular, corrupt-ass people that only care about themselves. They will bend and break every rule, betray you and kill you and not care about you. Honestly, it was funny. They would do anything to save their own family, cooperate, sell out their main best friend to save their own family. And then they want to kill you because you do the same for yours. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. So many things to think about. And I lived with that for months. Every day to try to, like, let go. My only escape was just a couple of moments with my wife that I could get in there and then be reminded of what I'm going to do. It was just so dreadful to just wake up and so scary to go to sleep. And then, you know, the people who depended on us, I was going to turn my back on them. Everything we worked so hard to build. Like, you were building a big old prison around yourself, and then you have to knock it down somehow to go into another prison. I wasn't feeling sorry for myself. I was just mad at myself, like, this is what I did. At the same time, I felt like some kind of, like, okay, what I could do, I did. I had to tell my family all the time, everything I could do to put myself in a good situation, I did it. Everything I could have done for the government, I went above and beyond. There's nothing more left I could do at that point. I gave them millions of dollars. I turned in people, I turned in drugs, I turned in everything. I did everything in my power. I went above and beyond to help build this case from practically alone. My brother and I were alone. It took work to be able to sacrifice. It took God's blessings to just be here today.
Do you still think it was the right decision? Be honest.
Now, you talk to me on a Monday, I tell you yes. Tuesday, I might tell you no.
9 months of recording deals with the lieutenants of the cartel certainly helped the feds put together their case. But there was one major piece of evidence they needed. A call with Chapo himself. It's something that, until now, had been impossible for anybody to get.
I remember I missed the first call. I missed the call when he called me. I remember I was sitting there, like, and I remember my brother standing there. I dropped my bag and I ran back to the house. The girls are there. And they see me. I'm telling my brother, like, follow me upstairs.
Because there was loads of people in the house all the time.
Yeah. You know, just running away, like, just trying to get away and get a quiet space. I was so nervous now. Of course, to make the recording, but of what was to come. What did this mean for my life? Like, it was an ugly feeling, you know? Like, getting the recorder out, and the only thing the feds had given me, like, a earpiece with a microphone on it, you know? When you put the phone to your ear, you could hear it, and then they could record. I remember putting it to my ear, and, like, the secretary answered. I'm like, oh, it's the twin.
Amigo, buenas noches.
Buenas noches, ¿cómo está?
Bien, ¿cómo le va?
Bien, bien.
Where were you in the house?
Upstairs. I remember we were in the first bedroom, and I remember locking the doors. Jay's like right there.
In your face?
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't even know what to say. I remember him saying amigo, like hearing his voice again.
Amigo!
¿Qué dice, cómo está?
Bien, bien,
¿cómo estás,
tu hermano?
Todos bien, hombre, aquí. Lástima que no me tocó verlo el otro día.
Ah,
era mi hermano.
Pero ahí estamos a la orden, ya sabes.
Sí, oye, todo bien.
The call with Chapo was the one chance the twins had to prove that they were telling the truth to the U.S. government. It was their only ticket out. Their life depended on this one call. Without the recording, the vital piece of evidence the feds needed, they wouldn't have been able to make a deal. All they had to do was get Chapo to confess without raising any suspicion at all from the world's most notorious and violent drug boss, the man who personally admitted to executing at least 2,000 people himself. Easy, right?
I felt ugly. I did. I had to get over that and just use this lie about getting a cheaper number on the heroin. That phone call was that what I was telling them was the truth, that me and him had a working relationship, that he knew that my office was in Chicago and that he had sold drugs to me, and sold tons of drugs to me, to my brother, and that he was like, you know, we were working together to move these drugs and sell them. I understood at that time that to make the conversation good is that we talk about future shipments and past ones. That was like a big moment. You know, I remember thinking like, this is like my way, my ticket home one day. I remember getting another phone and just playing back the conversation like with anticipation. Like, I hope I got it. Like nerves, like, did we get it? Imagine we did it. Imagine having to call Chapo back. Hey, can we do this again? Take two. This is the thing that can go through your mind, like playing the conversation again and thinking like, I can't lose this. Let's record it on our other phone. And my brother, here, you could re-record it, you know, like copy it on your phone too, like later on off my other phone. And then thinking like, we're not gonna give it to the feds until we make a deal. It was those little troubles, those little struggles that you're facing, all those perils of cooperating, right? People really don't know. Like, imagine every day. It was like this for all those months and having our family and being stressful. And again, it's something that we had to do. We put ourselves in that position. I will say, I think for all those years that we sold drugs, those months of cooperating, in my head, I was like, we're even. You know, we're even. Like, I didn't risk myself this much, you know, when I was like selling the drugs. Me and my brother were putting our life at risk doing all this. And I remember like talking to the feds. And I was like, I got it. Like, what? Got the call, man, with Chapo. They're like, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, for real? I'm like, you wanna hear it? It was like late and they're like, bro, don't fuck around with me. Like, you really got it. I got it. And then I remember just them calling me. And our plan was not gonna work. They wanted to stop fucking around and bring it. The feds meet us where we had been meeting before in a subdivision. It's like a big ass oak tree. Like the street lights, it was just like a dark spot in this subdivision that I wasn't comfortable with meeting at because other people lived there, but you know, I could only complain so much. Go park behind, you know, this Land Cruiser, bulletproof Land Cruiser with diplomatic plates. And I'm jumping in the car. How more up? You know, they just shoot me, just kill me. Is that what you want me to do? Just die? Just tell me. Like in cartel world, you know? Literally behind enemy lines, like just doing that. And that nervous thing of looking around. That nervous one, I remember my palms getting sweaty, like feeling like cold, like sweat, you know?
On your forehead.
Yeah, it's like mad. At the same time, I'm angry. Like you keep putting me in these situations. I remember going and taking the recorder and be like, don't lose this. You better be there that day. You better be there at my sentencing to tell them what I did to get this. Oh, no problem, man. We're all gonna be there.
And you just handed it over.
And then, I remember them, like, what's next? Oh, they're gonna authenticate it. Make sure it's his voice. But it happened pretty fast. Literally, we're like, it's midnight. 1 a.m. when he calls me, like,
we got a match. It's in.
It was late in the night. I remember they called. They confirmed that it was an authentic recording. I could hear screaming, cheering.
Like a celebration.
Celebration. I was still taken back.
I remember the prosecutor would tell me, I promise you, I'll be doing cartwheels and somersaults at your sentencing. No, some, and he'll be like, I'll do cartwheels and backflips. My brother and I had the only legal recording of Chapo Guzman they ever had.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million. Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We didn't have a plan. 2 weeks after the chapel recording, and we get a call, it's a Sunday. Our attorney wants to talk to us. It's early, right? 10, 11 in the morning, around there. And he said,
you know, the U.S. attorney wants to talk to you.
He said,
he wants you guys to turn yourselves in today.
I remember my brother looking at each other like, wow, this reality just hit us. Huh? What?
Just like that, after around 9 months of recording and cooperating with the US government, it was time. The twins were given 2 hours to meet back under the big oak tree in the middle of the subdivision and finally hand themselves over. The rest of their family had been in the dark for months. But as soon as the cartel found out about what Pete and Jay were up to, they would come for their family. So they had to drop the bombshell of what was about to happen. And it started with the man who brought them into this life in the first place, their father.
I think it was the hardest thing I had to do was to face my father. My father used to be like, you could be a killer, you could be whatever, you're just not gonna be a thief and you're not gonna be a queer. And the most important one, you're never gonna be a snitch. I had to lie to him. Me and my brother came up with this lie to try to soften it up a little bit. We go to his house that we bought him. Regardless, he lived a great life, right? His $3 million house, brand new cars. I said, we have to talk, and without my mom. It was hard, like, I didn't even know how to say it. And I don't even know who even spoke. But I said, I said, Dad, the government found us. He said, what? I said, the government found us. They've been watching us. They know exactly where you live. They know where we all live. He's like, are you serious? I said, yeah. He said, come on, let's go. You know, he's walking back. Let's go, let's go. No, it's over. There's no more running. He said, you could go. I said, they knocked on the door and they said, your life is going to be in danger anyway, so we're going to arrest you, or you have a chance you could cooperate. He looked, he said, what? And what'd you say? I said, we will cooperate. I cannot put my family in danger. He said, you will cooperate? And he said, man are you? Cooperate, he said. The men, them people kill you, they will hunt you. They will kill you. You could never survive going against them. How could you? You knew what the fuck you were doing. And I remember saying, it's not even about us, it's about our family. He said, fuck them. You guys are fucking cowards. I raised fucking women. He said, oh, now you guys want to, you know, snitch. He's like, you know who Chapo and Maya are? I remember, like, I never liked talking back to my dad. I know who they are. And if it's going to be me or them, I'm going to choose me every fucking day. You could look up to them. You admire them. You do whatever you want. I'm not. And I said, they're giving us a chance to leave. Do it for us. You never did anything for us. You put us, you gave us this life. I'm just saying, just give us a chance. Let's just leave. He said, I can't. I said, they're willing to forgive you. And they're willing to give you a visa. That hurt. That, like, hurt. I'm like, he he looked like, damn, you guys went that far already? And, you know, we were all in tears, all of us, my father, all of us, like, I could feel his anger, like, and then I said, do it for us, please, just do it for us. Be mad, do whatever you want, but just do it for us. And I said, me and my brother are going to prison. He wouldn't say much, I just kept nodding his head. And just like, you guys ain't my sons.
What you're about to hear is the full, unedited, 2-minute, 15-second conversation that Pete recorded with El Chapo that was played in court during El Chapo's trial in 2018. Pete begins by asking how Chapo is, and Chapo responds with, fine, nice talking to you. How is your brother? For an English translation, go to lionsgatesound.com.
Bueno.
Amigo.
¿Qué dice? ¿Cómo está?
Bien, bien, gusto saludarte. ¿Cómo está tu hermano?
Todos bien, hombre, aquí. Lástima que no me tocó verlo el otro día. Era mi hermano.
Pero ahí estamos a la orden, ya sabes.
Sí, oiga, todo bien, gusto saludarlo. Oiga, acá además lo estaba molestando para lo del otro día que recogí allá. Y le iba a decir, ahí tengo el cheque listo, no sé si... Le quería pedir un favor.
Dime.
¿Usted cree que lo podemos arreglar? ¿Me puede rebajar unos 5 pesos de esos?
¿A cómo tratamos?
Me lo está dando a 55.
Ay, ¿cómo lo van a pagar?
Yo le dije, oiga, si me hace el favor, se los pago 50, pero ahí tengo el cheque listo.
¿Ya tiene el dinero?
Digo, si me los puede dejar, ¿verdad? La diferencia de 5 se los pago luego y si quiere mandarme más, pues, unos...
Bueno, ¿cuánto es lo que te entregaron?
Me entregaron 20.
¿Cuánto?
20.
Ah, bueno, entonces mañana recojo el dinero, ¿está bien?
Sí. Okay.
¿Alguien
hace previsto? Ok, le agradezco mucho. Es que también es que allá el otro señor también me había dado algo que no salió bueno y los tengo que ahí emparejar.
Oye,
con...
¿tú no tienes manera de traer ese dinero hasta aquí?
¿Hasta aquí? Sí, ¿cómo no?
¿Me lo das aquí entonces?
Sí, oiga. Si me da unos, deme unos dígitos y aquí se lo tengo. Es más, yo tenía un chequecito que ya venía y en cuanto me llegue, si quiere, le adelanto algo. Cuando me llegue unos, tenía como unos 400.
Espérame, deja, ahorita voy a hablar con una persona. Deja, si hay quien recoge ese dinero allá.
Sí.
Ahorita te hablo atrás, espérame.
Ok.
Espérame.
Surviving El Chapo, the twins who brought down a drug lord, is hosted by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and me, Charlie Webster. Our producers are myself alongside Jackson McLennan. Research and editorial support is from Casey Hertz. Edit and sound design by Nico Palella. Original score by Ryan Sorensen. Executive produced by Curtis 50 Cent Jackson and myself, Charlie Webster. If you'd like to know more about this story, head over to lionsgatesound.com. Curtis 50 Cent Jackson presents a Lionsgate Sound and G-Unit audio production exclusively for iHeart Podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now? Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.